Blog Talk Radio.
M. Bounds, a short biography. Edward McKendry Bounds was born in Shelby County, Missouri, on August 15, 1835, and died on August 24, 1913, in Washington, Georgia. He was admitted to the bar in 1854 at the age of 19, but left the profession 5 years later when he answered the call of God to the ministry. Beginning in 1863, in the midst of the Civil War, he became the chaplain of the 5th Missouri Regiment of the Confederacy. Bounds married Miss Emmy Barnett of Eufaula, Alabama, in 1876. By this union, he became the father of two daughters, Celeste and Cornelia, and a son, Edward, who died at the age of 6. His wife, Emmy, died in 1886, and later Bounds married Miss Hattie Barnett, Emmy's cousin. Together, they had 6 children: Samuel, Charles, Osborne, Elizabeth, Mary, and Emmy. However, Charles died at the age of 1, so in the end, the family consisted of 7 children. After serving several important churches in St. Louis and other places to the south, Bounds became editor of the St. Louis Christian Advocate for 8 years, and later, associate editor of the Nashville Christian Advocate for 4 years. The trial of his faith came while he was in Nashville, and he quietly retired to his home without even asking for a pension. His principal work in Washington, Georgia, his home, was rising at 4 o'clock in the morning and praying until 7 o'clock. He filled a few engagements as an evangelist during the 18 years of his life work in Washington, Georgia. While I was a pastor in Atlanta in 1905, I was informed that there was an apostolic man of prayer in Georgia who would aid the church in attaining a high level of spiritual things. The next mail carried a letter asking that apostolic man, Mr. Bounds, to come to our convention for 10 days of preaching. Naturally, we expected to see a man of imposing physique. But when he came, we discovered that he was only about 5.5 feet tall. But in him, we met one of the greatest saints that, in our humble opinion, has appeared on the spiritual horizon in the last 100 years. He spoke the first afternoon on prayer. No one seemed to be particularly impressed. The next morning, at 4 o'clock, we were amazed to hear him engaged in the most wonderful prayer we have ever heard, a prayer that seemed to take in both heaven and earth. His sermons were all about prayer and heaven. Not one morning during his stay did he fail to make his prayers a great while before day. Mark chapter 1, verse 35. He didn't care when the other occupants of his room protested for waking them at that unheard-of hour. No man could have made more melting appeals for lost souls and backslidden ministers than did Bounds. Tears ran down his face as he pleaded for us in that room. I know of no other man on earth today who would have gone away defeated if he had followed the same practice at the same place in the same room. But Bounds was all-powerful, all-commanding, and all-victorious when once he knew his cause was just. After that convention, we took him to our heart and never let him go. God sent him in answer to our prayer to settle and establish this writer in the things of God that are foremost and supreme: prayer, preaching, and the study of the Bible. We were constantly with him in prayer and preaching for 8 precious years. Not a foolish word did we ever hear him utter. He was one of the most intense eagles of God that ever penetrated the spiritual realm. He could not tolerate delay in rising or being late for dinner. He would often go with me to street meetings in Brooklyn, listen to the preaching, and sing those beautiful songs of Wesley and Watts with us, but reprimanded me for asking the unconverted to sing of heaven. He said, "They have no heart to sing. They do not know God, and God does not hear them. Quit asking sinners to sing the songs of Zion and the Lamb." To what mysterious order of men did Bounds belong, anyway? Have they disappeared from the world? Few subjects create more interest in the mind of the fervent Christian reader than the subject Bounds has named: heaven, a state, a city, and a home. He was so full of the heavenly manna that God produced through him that the spiritual splendor shone out of every chapter of his wonderful books. In 1912, I wrote to him to come to Brooklyn, New York, to pray for me and my church. Here are a few excerpts from his personal letters to us at this time, which show the depths of his thought for a home in heaven. Washington, July 1st, 1912. "I am thinking more of going to heaven than to New York. It is far better, but it is in God's will. I would enjoy being with you. God seems to have opened the way. I will have to wait on God for New York or heaven, as I am now very weak. With all love and prayer." December 12th and 13th, 1912. "You will pray much. I am turning to you and Chilton. One of you must help me to do the work on my manuscripts that I want finished and published. I could go to you, and then you could help me in odd times by prayer and consultation. We would then be together as long as God lets me live for his great work. We can issue the books together, and you can keep them if necessary until I die, until God's fitting time to publish." On January 6th, 1913, he wrote, "Dearly beloved, a good time praying for you. Be at it early and late. Let your mind live in the spirit of prayer. The thought of heaven is sweet. I am very weak, but will strive to work on and wait for God's time for heaven." He was growing weaker and nearing the other shore when he wrote this letter. April 21st, 1913. "God will manage our affairs if we will be filled with his affairs. I am trying to get matters in shape for my manuscripts. I am very weak. I want to live for God and then depart and be with Christ. I have an unspeakable desire to know the future, to see it and enjoy it, and to be there, to see and enjoy. God bless you." The following letters I call dying messages to one whom he loved. Washington, May 10th, 1913. "With all love and longing and prayers, God bless and keep you until eternal life. With many trials and tears I am pressing on. I am still weak, but by sleeping in the day I can get through. When he is ready, I long for the heavenlies through Christ." Washington, Georgia, May 22nd, 1913. "Yours came. I have you in prayer. At it early and trying to be at it all the day. God bless you with eternal life and hasten the day. Go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in. Bear your boys on your prayers to the doors of heaven. I am getting the book ready to send to England. Pray God will open the way for it, to his glory, in love and faithful prayer as my strength will allow. He wrote one card dated June 26, 1913. Washington, Georgia. In prayerful sympathy and love, hold to the old truth, double distilled, purified, and concentrated. The above card was the last word written to us in his own hand. On August 9th, shortly before he died, his wife writes, "He was glad to hear from you, but soon forgets. My physician says he will never be well again." His last message to you is characteristic. Tell him he is on the right track. Press it. Have a high standard and hold to it. Then came the telegram announcing his homegoing. Washington, Georgia, August 24, 1913. Dr. Bounds went home this afternoon. Funeral here tomorrow afternoon. Hattie Bounds. Homer W. Hodge. Pastor and Prayer. Why and How Pastors Ought to Pray. By E. M. Bounds. Narrated by Lyle Blaker. Three things make a divine: prayer, meditation, temptation. Martin Luther. If you do not pray, God will probably lay you aside from your ministry, as he did me, to teach you to pray. Remember Luther's maxim: to have prayed well is to have studied well. Get your text from God, your thoughts, your words. Robert Murray McShane. Recreation to the minister must be as whetting is with the mower, to be used only as is necessary for his work. Should a physician in plague time take any more relaxation or recreation than is necessary for his life, when so many are expecting his help in a case of life and death? Will you stand by and see sinners gasping under the pangs of death and say, "God does not require me to make a drudge of myself to save them"? Is this the voice of a ministerial or Christian compassion, or of sensual laziness and diabolical cruelty? Richard Baxter. Squandering time is injurious to the mind. In illness, I have looked back with self-reproach on days spent in my study. I was wading through history and poetry and monthly journals, but I was in my study. Another man's trifling is notorious to all observers. But what am I doing? Nothing, perhaps, that has a profit to the spiritual good of my congregation. Be much in retirement and prayer. Study the honor and glory of your master. Richard Cecil.